The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
Now, what would you do if your husband rang you from the motorway, you heard the sound of a crash, and then he simply vanished? Well, that's the gripping premise at the heart of If These Walls Could Talk. It's a new novel from author Michelle McDonough. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Pat.
Delighted to have you here. I've been enjoying the book while I was on holiday.
Thank you.
It brings together so many threads of Irish life, different aspects of Irish life. But first of all, where did you get the idea from?
Well, the idea for this one actually came from a real life experience. It happened to my husband, Greg, about 14 years ago. I was on the phone to him late one night. So he was travelling from Cashel to Dublin. That's all I knew. He was on the motorway coming from a work event late at night and it was raining. And I was at home in bed with a toddler and a baby fast asleep. So while I was on the phone to him, he crashed the car. And all I heard was a bang and this noise, kind of like kerfuffle, and him just calling, "Shell, Shell," three times he called my name.
And that was it?
And that was it. I sat there and
terrified
and thought, what do I do? So I rang 999 straight away. And the first thing they asked me was, where is he? And I said, I don't know. He's somewhere between Cashel and Dublin. And what time did he leave Cashel? I don't know.
I didn't know. And I mean, why should you know?
Yeah, I hadn't asked him. I didn't know. And then it was I had to ring his parents who were in Spain at the time to explain what had happened, when after 10 minutes I'd heard nothing back. It was a half an hour before I was waiting to hear back from the guards. They couldn't find him. So he had overturned. The car had left the motorway, hit the central bollard. Mm-hmm. He'd picked up oil on his tyres, we later found out. Left the motorway, ended up on its side in a field, written off. And it was a Kia Jeep, which he reckoned saved his life at the time. So he scrambled back out in his suit and he had been all geared up for work to the motorway through the hedgerow and brambles. Flagged down a taxi
and
driver.
And what about the phone? Had that been
phone
shattered?
Phone was shattered, Flagged, and there was boxes of wine glasses in the car from the event, all shattered. He walked away without a scratch. Flagged down a taxi driver, and this is true. The taxi driver had no credit, so we had to bring him to the nearest Apple Green. And every time we passed the Apple Green in Kildare, we're like, that's where Dad had his crash.
So the pinpointing the crash, I mean, subsequently, it was somewhere near the Apple Green.
Somewhere near the Apple Green, a field there. Yeah.
A field near the Apple Green.
Yeah.
So that was the inspiration, your terror 11 years ago, or whatever it was.
Yeah. It has left me with a kind of an anxiety whenever anybody's on the road and I can't get through to them. But then on a more positive note, when I was coming up with an idea for book four, I thought, what if, you know, a woman was on to her husband and he crashed the Jeep and the Jeep was found, but there's no sign of him.
And that's where the fun begins. The whole thing begins. The terror stays with you. You say are you a bad passenger yourself?
Oh, I'm a terrible passenger. But I would say my husband, he's probably listening, is a terrible driver as well. He's one of these that sees no fear and, you know, drives probably a little bit too fast.
And it's lashing rain and you're terrified in the passenger seat.
Yes. Well, whether it's raining or not, I'm terrified in the passenger seat. Yeah.
But it shows with a novelist, nothing's ever wasted.
No.
So that was the
trauma.
Now, there are a number of different threads going through this. I mean, it starts with the missing husband. But as we go through the book, which, as I say, I enjoyed when I was on holiday, more and more detail of their lives together unfolds. I don't know how much you want to tell me about that.
Well, I suppose,
because there's another parallel story as well.
Yes. And as the guards begin to investigate, Hazel comes to realise that her, you know, this work perfect from the outside family and world is not as it seems. And Dara had secrets, a lot of different secrets, and they could potentially put their family's lives at risk, definitely their future.
You can tell us a little bit about the couple, because they were a Celtic Tiger couple. Mm. I mean, she's a professional. He is running his business. It goes well up. And then?
She's a GP. He was one of the Celtic Tiger flying to the Galway races in his helicopter types. And lost everything and has risen from the ashes, you know, like a phoenix from the ashes. And he's back in the big time again, but he's burnt a lot of people.
And doesn't mind rubbing people's noses in his newfound prosperity.
No, and she doesn't like that. So they're quite different. They're two very different people. And she's a GP, but she's a mother. most of all. They have three teenage boys. He lives in Dublin, in a penthouse in Dublin, and they have a big McMansion in Furbo in Galway. And
which she really hates.
She just wants a house with normal doors and windows. They have these big picture windows looking out over the bay. Stunning house, but it doesn't feel like home to her. So, yeah, and I suppose I like to kind of, I think it's my journalism background. The books are like kind of steeped in realism. So you do have, you know, real life news stories and things, sure, threading into it.
Yeah.
There's certain, you know, there's questions about where is he? Is he somewhere concussed? And then as news comes out, or the guards find, you know, that he may have been involved financially with some pretty nefarious characters, some with
again,
that links to Dubai.
Thread,
yes.
A thread running through Irish life.
That we'd also be familiar with.
Yeah. The question I asked myself while I was reading the book, why did she marry him? Did he cut her up to the eyeballs?
I'd say a lot of people from the get-go. He's charming. He's charismatic. She did love him. She loved him, you know, at the beginning of the book, and she still probably does love him. But whether they have a future together at the end is
an open question.
Yeah,
we don't do any spoilers.
Yeah.
The other thread that's running through, though, is a reference to an institution that is now, like many of them around the country, closed and gone.
Yeah. And that is St. Brendan's. And that is based really on St. Bridget's Mental Hospital in Galway. So Glenbeg was the setting for my first book, and we're back to Glenbeg for book four. And it's really loosely based on Ballinasloe, where I would have spent a lot of time as a child because my maternal grandparents lived there, and they lived in a little house in the middle of the town. But there was this great big hulking grey building on the edge of town that we were always very familiar with and aware of. And we used to swim in the river there, in the River Sook, and the hospital wasn't that far from there. And I remember one day, and I've actually used it in the book, we all had to get out of the river because somebody from the hospital had gone in again and they were dredging the river. And it was just something about, I started researching it then, and I found these urban explorers who've been into the hospital, which closed in 2013. And the photos of the state of that building are shocking. I printed a load of them out, and they were on the wall, papered the wall beside my desk. And it's basically been eaten alive by vegetation. It is, and it's so eerie because you have still got beds, trolleys there. You've got a wheelchair sitting in the middle of a corridor with padded doors. You should actually go online and look at it.
And were there records left as well?
There were records left, yeah. So a local woman went in and took them out, and they were just left, thrown around the place, patients' records.
So when they closed it, I mean, literally they abandoned it.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost overnight.
Yeah. There's an old piano there, but it's completely derelict now, falling apart.
It forms part of the story, that's all we'll
say
at this point. In terms of writing the book, I played a clip of you at the very beginning of the show saying it's very, you know, it's much more demanding than you may at first think writing a book like this.
Yes, yeah, it is, especially when you're in the crime genre and you're writing psychological suspense. Readers like a book every year. They like to know there's, you know, a new whatever, Andrea Mara or whatever the book is coming out the next year.
So even as you're talking to me about book four, you're writing book five.
Book five has to be delivered by the end of the summer, and I'm panicking. and you're promoting book four, and sometimes I have to remind myself of even the names of the characters because I'm deep into book five.
Because when you hand in book five, which will be the end of the summer, it won't appear until this time next year.
No, and it will go through numerous drafts after I hand it in to my editor, numerous drafts before it appears next year. Yeah.
And then you have to start.
So you're always working
book
ahead.
Six.
Start or come up with an idea for book six.
Now, what about ideas? I mean, do you harvest ideas from all sorts of places? Because you have a journalism background.
Yeah, funnily enough, I don't have a load of ideas. Well, I have a folder with ideas, but they're never right. And it's always as I'm coming to the end of one book, something will start, a seed will start. And I'll start thinking about that. It's like I have to say goodbye to one book first, and then my brain just opens. But I soak up news, court reports, inquests, agony aunt pages, the farming agony aunt pages. I mean, there's such material there for stories and intrigue and suspense and revenge and, you know, all of that.
Yeah, I can imagine. This rural noir, I mean, do you embrace that term?
Yes, I think it's quite funny because I regard myself as very cosmopolitan, being from Galway City. Mm. But my first book was set on a farm and there was a slurry pit. So I think, and because I'm from outside Dublin, I'm a culchie. So yeah, I think I don't even know where the term came from. But yeah, of course, I'll embrace it.
And yet we know from real life events that the slurry pit can often feature either, you know, definitively features in the discovery of a body or whatever, or the suspicion that at some point in the past, a slurry pit may have been used to dispose of a body.
Yeah.
What sort of a personality do you think you have? You know, when you're writing this stuff, it's dark.
It's funny, John Breen in Waterstones says, the Cork crime writers, he said, you'll never meet a nicer group of women. And he said, and it's hard to believe, you know, that they commit so many murders between them all. And a lot of the writers, we're all just normal. I don't know where the darkness comes from in the writing. But I would be, I suppose, I spend most of the time at home on my own writing. And then for a couple of weeks every year, it's the publication madness. Yeah. And if you saw me 2 weeks ago, Pat, I was so anxious. I didn't think I'd be able to come to Dublin to do any of this. Okay. Like, the anxiety can be crippling at times. But
now, the doyen of crime writing, of course, Agatha Christie, a female.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is it about today's crop of crime writers? So many of them are female.
Yeah. I suppose we're writing about real fears. But in our books, we get to deal with the baddie. And, you know, there's a resolution. It's very, very satisfying. You can tie up, not too neatly, but tie up the ends.
So all your nightmares you can dispose of in fiction, even if in fact they might persist.
Even though you don't even know that they're your nightmares, it just comes out when you sit down to write. Mm.
Well, as I say, I'll say it again. I really enjoyed the book. It's called If These Walls Could Talk. The author is Michelle McDonough. This is book number 4. If you haven't read 1, 2 and 3, I would recommend you go back and read those too. Michelle, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.